Monday, April 12th, Falling Dominoes, Greg McGill and Willie Wet, Red Pill. How's it going? Hey, Willie, you there?
Hey, yeah. Hello. I'm here.
Okay, yeah, just checking in. So what's been going on? We're watching all this stuff happening with gun control, and we're watching all these laws being passed by different states on different things, and it just seems like they're just doubling down, man. They've accelerated their plans to, you know, and then what's going to happen when that trial is done, right?
Right. They're solving.
Right.
Yeah. The man that they say murdered George Floyd, right?
Well,
and they just keep going with that narrative.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it's been proven that he was not murdered. He died of a fentanyl overdose amongst other drugs that were in his system, but fentanyl being unbelievably lethal. I mean, it's just a killer drug, and he had,
right.
I don't know what the dosage he had in his system, but from what I understand, it was a lethal dosage. And then to have anxiety that he had or whatever was going on with him when he was being arrested and how he wouldn't calm down, and they were trying to get him to calm down and he just wouldn't do it.
Well, we all know that. We agree that, you know, that's the police didn't kill him, but it's still not cool the way the Israeli tactics that they use.
Yeah.
The Mossad, Krav Maga that they teach. That's where all that kneeling on the neck crap comes from, and they need to stop that. There's no place in that in law enforcement, and that's the only thing. So it doesn't. I mean, they kind of almost have a little case there just because of that being used.
Yeah. Hey, gentlemen.
Yeah.
I heard a lot of flip flopping the last few days. They did 10 days of the trial. At this point, and it was a big deal where this one gentleman, supposedly a respiratory expert or something like that, said just from looking at video footage, he thought he could see the moment where George Floyd died and stopped breathing. Although we've heard other reports that he died later at the hospital, for that matter. But that was a big thing in that day of the trial. I think it was day 9. And then in day 10, and that guy also said 3 times the lethal dose of fentanyl and methamphetamine didn't factor in, which is insane. But the next day, day 10 that just passed, it had a pretty brutal witness stand testimony from the original person who attested that he was dead. So that was pretty damning to the prosecution. But no matter how it turns out in the court, you know that BLM are going to do more rioting.
Yeah, there's going to be a riot either way, don't you guys think?
Yeah, they're allowed to riot because they're a a Jewish organization. But right. if you know, Patriots go to the Capitol and have a protest, and then
right.
the police invite them in, and then they go in, well, then that's a terrorist attack.
Yeah. Did you guys see where that BLM co-founder has a house empire in Topanga Canyon and all these non-black areas? Like she has a house now. It's 1.8% black in the area she's in. So she doesn't want to live. They don't want to live among all people.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
Sure.
Yeah, why isn't she gentrifying, you know, the black neighborhood?
They didn't do anything. Actually, I have something brilliant to read about that somebody wrote about the whole BLM. I got to find it here. The BLM thing has been a huge... If you think about it, all these organizations, none of them are started or really led by black people. Not any of them are. They have some higher ups, you know, that are black, yeah, in their corporate, in their scam or whatever. But it's not started by black people or led by, and really, we know who it's led by.
Yes, you know? We do. Yeah. All the corporations are trying to prop up black people, like they're using them as props.
For sure.
It's ridiculous. Like, they're like, oh, look
how... I saw that thing.
Look at us, we're diversity, and they have like a group of people all sitting together, and then the white people have their arms around the black people. I mean, it's so humiliating.
Bad. I mean, they're in charge of NAACP, they're in charge of all the black organizations. They're not led by black
right.
people. It's by Jews. Hey, check this out. It says here, the BLM, the most despicable con in modern history. Several years ago, a charity called Wounded Warriors burst onto the nonprofit scene, claiming they were going to purchase high-quality prosthetics for veterans. They raised tens of millions of dollars in a matter of months. A quick glance at the financials showed a problem. 2% of the money went to helping veterans. The other 99.8% went straight into the pockets of the guy who started it. As horrible as that is, what the founders of BLM did over the last 5 years is even worse. Back in 2017, after raising several million during the Ferguson riots, the question was asked for the very first time, what did they do with all that money? Surely they put together some scholarships or helped a single mother buy a house or paid for bail and lawyers for all the people they encouraged to riot who are now in jail, right? Well, they did none of those things. A few years later, the world watches in horror as George Floyd dies. BLM immediately reappears. With lessons learned from 2016, they're ready to take it to another level. Fanning the flames of racial tension, they exploit the black community, demand support and participation from whites, to the newly created philosophy of white guilt. Corporations find themselves in a desperate rush to avoid the woke warrior mob's wrath. They all tweet their support and proudly announce donations. The NBA takes it to another level. BLM shirt. All the sports ones. All the corporations took it to them, right? So then BLM encouraged the rioting and looting of a dozen or more U.S. cities. The movement spread to England, even. And to date, these chapters have yet to state one single goal. That the BLM chapter, they haven't stated any goal. They're just rioting for the sake of rioting. The black community in those cities have completely turned their backs on these groups. Meanwhile, any of the people in the United States, like Wayne Dupree, Candace, Crystal Walker, Charles Barkley, John Jones, they start cautioning other people. You know what happens to them. They get called tops, all that other stuff. And the riots are destroying black neighborhoods and businesses. The vast majority of BLM protesters are simply pimply-faced, nerdy white college kids who just read Karl Marx and think they're part of some revolution. You will rarely see blacks participating in BLM events. Most quickly realize they're being exploited. They become offended, and rightly so. They begin asking questions like, who's going to rebuild our burned-down buildings? And we don't want to defund police. I'm saying that we want that. We want better relations so this shit stops happening.
Okay.
You know? So anyway, this goes on, but basically, the gist of this whole thing was he wanted it to be a lesson, a very expensive lesson, as this movement has caused billions in damage, led to hundreds of deaths, ruin countless lives. Also, these con artists can run off with millions of dollars. So it's basically a warning. It's not the only organization that's done, you know, taking the money. That most of them do that. Any of these, United Way, they all take, you know, the money. But BLM has actually done very dangerous things as an organization. They're a terrorist organization that have taken the money and gone. So these other ones, they're not necessarily a terrorist organization. They're just scams. Well, BLM's a scam and a terrorist organization. Very, very dangerous. You know. So anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. There was a lot of good information in that.
Yeah.
You know, there's always going to be greedy con artists like that. BLM and, but, you know, people that we've got to stop giving them money. There's just a, you know, but all the corporations and stuff went in on this. You know? Like everything. Like all the big corporations went.
Yes, they do. That's exactly right. The banks, and they're all continuing on to, they're just forcing down their employees' throats all the stuff, all the time, yeah. Every single day. They never complain about any of the murders that happened to, like, the white children, that little white kid over in North Carolina that was murdered by that black kid, just shot him right in the head, a four-year-old kid. You'll never hear about that.
No, you don't hear anything about it.
You'll only hear about this this shooting that they're calling white supremacy over in Georgia, right? But it was a Syrian guy.
That's never even a white person who does it. Something like that. Dark white skin.
Narrative. It's disgusting. I mean, it's so...
Yeah, we're under attack. We are under attack. Now look at this. The Second Amendment rights have been threatened. They're like trying to start a civil war at this point when they're like actively saying we're coming after your gun. You know, there's no hiding it. There's no going around it any other way. We're coming right after it now.
Yeah. I got a copy of the American Free Press, which is a pretty good newspaper. And one of the articles in here was part, I'll just read you the headlines. The front cover says, "The War on Whites, Biden teams up with the ADL, FBI, and CIA to crush, quote-unquote, white supremacy." And there's another article in here called "Pardoned Spy Jonathan Pollard Says It's Your Duty to Spy on the U.S. And that's on page 12. That might be an interesting one to read. I'll pick a little one here. But yeah, some pretty interesting stuff. I turned on the radio the other day, and it was pretty sickening to hear somebody kvetching about racism. It was some commercial about stopping racism, acts of racism. I mean, I'd only had the radio on. I never listened to the radio. It literally popped on for 5 seconds, and that's what was blared into my ear. You know, so I can only imagine what it's like, I mean, listening to the radio all the time.
It's just like the TV.
I could read you this article about Jonathan Pollard. Probably take 5 minutes to get through it. The State of Israel's Avenging Angel, Jonathan Pollard. Jonathan Pollard, the American naval defense analyst who betrayed his country, was Israel's avenging angel with the classified corridors of the U.S. Navy in the early 1980s. He is now calling on all young Jews working in the U.S. intelligence apparatus to become traitors like him to spy for Israel. He reckons that American Jews are deluding themselves if they do not understand that they have dual loyalty. He claims that when the FBI arrested him, they gave him a book with the names of prominent American Jews in it and asked him to circle the ones who had ties to Israeli intelligence. He refused to do it because it reminded him of a book the Nazis had for their invasion of Great Britain. He now says that the U.S. betrayed Israel by withholding classified intelligence from it, and it was something... that he could not allow to stand. In retaliation, and eventually one can argue, he punished America by passing its most classified secrets to Israel, including how it spied on Israel, and especially on the Soviets. Nowadays, he asserts that America had no business concealing information about Iraq building chemical weapons, and that it was America's duty to share its intelligence secrets with its ally, Israel. In the early 1980s, when he held the highest naval intelligence access, he must have been aware that Iraq was the only capable of building those weapons with the aid of the United States, and then realized Saddam might one day use them against his enemies. Exposed as a traitor in 1985, he served 30 years behind bars. He was released on parole in 2015, much to the anger of many CIA officers, who argued that he should have served a full life sentence. In 2020, the parole expired, and Pollard was flown in secret to Jerusalem and a hero's welcome on the private plane of the late Sheldon Adelson, the casino magnate who spent millions supporting Donald Trump, who knew all about the flight. You might have seen this, right, when Benjamin Netanyahu greeted him when he got off the plane. Anyway, now back in Israel, Pollard sounds bullish, issuing statements that he would not have made when he petitioned for parole or even before he left U.S. soil in 2020. He is praising himself for betraying America. It is therefore hardly surprising that many former CIA agents will be further upset because they know what the public only suspects, that he did irreparable damage to U.S. national security. To this day, one cannot get a straight answer about all of the classified materials he passed to the Israelis and whether they sold some of the pilfered secrets to the Soviets to barter for the release of Jews in Russia and Soviet satellite nations. One thing is certain, national security agencies' most secret surveillance systems, including one that it used to spy on the Israeli embassy in Washington. Pollard can now say whatever he wants because he lives in Israel, where he is King David in that incarnate. He told the newspaper owned by Adelson's estate that America stabbed Israel in the back and lied to it. He claims that he could not let that go and that every Jew should ask what never again means. What he means is that he decided to punish his country and risk the lives of every American during the Cold War. On the face of it, Pollard presents himself as the dedicated adherent whose goal was to protect Israel, but this is hardly the full story. Pollard has been conveniently revising history to portray himself as a national hero in Israel. In truth, he had other motives for stealing secrets from his workplace, and money was one of them, so much so that he offered to sell secrets to several other nations, including Pakistan. The Israelis, in a two-year period, paid him $50,000, now the equivalent of $500,000, and wined and dined him because he had lavish taste. They also bought him gifts he requested for both he and his wife. According to a 1999 New Yorker report, Pollard exposed the surveillance operation in the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv, as well as details about U.S. satellite capabilities. He also had access to data on how U.S. submarines tracked those of our adversaries, including Soviet ones. He is careful not to talk in detail about the massive quantity of materials he passed to the Israelis, though he has been willing to blame late Israel spymaster Rafi Eitan for not having a proper escape plan in place when the FBI came for him. Elton is not alive to defend himself, but some of his associates have said quietly that he never liked Pollard. Eitan was the spy who helped late Robert Maxwell, a British media magnate, market the Promise software Eitan stole from a Washington high-tech company. The Mossad placed a backdoor in it, and Maxwell sold it to Los Alamos so Israel could steal America's nuclear secrets. Eitan worked closely with Maxwell and respected his skills, but he felt that Pollard was hard to handle. While he may never know the full extent of Pollard's betrayal, most experts agree it was one of the most damaging in the history of espionage against America. One of those experts, Armin Rosen, says that it has, quote-unquote, few parallels. All right, I'm almost there. A couple more small paragraphs here. Pollard stole an estimated 1,500 current intelligence summary messages referring to daily reports and various reasons of interest to U.S. national security. He stole another 800 classified documents on top of that. During the investigation into his espionage, Pollard recalled that his first and possibly largest delivery occurred on January 23, 1984, and consisted of five suitcases full of classified material, explains Rosen. Pollard prefers not to dwell on the amount and nature of the intelligence he stole, and which he gave to Israel and offered to share with others for money. Perhaps spymaster Rafi Eitan knew the real Jonathan Pollard, and that greed, perhaps as much as his love for Israel, was at the core of his betrayal of America. That's that. I think it went a little longer than 5 minutes. But, and you get a good picture of Jonathan Pollard.
Is that just Maxwell's dad?
A greedy traitor.
Is that her dad?
Maxwell, yeah. So the late Robert Maxwell, yeah, that's Ghislaine Maxwell's father, if I have it
right.
Correct there, okay.
Yeah, I would think so.
Not very many degrees of separation between these creeps.
No, not really. No, there isn't. They're all in on it. They're pretty much, yeah. Yep,
that's
it's a big club, and we ain't in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, that's crazy. I'm just tripping out on this. My biggest thing right now, I think that this is the most worrisome thing that's going on immediately, is the gun control stuff. That's probably what's the most... they're really pushing it hard right now. And it's not, you know, they're just talking about changing amendments and then all these executive orders, and it's going to, you know...
Right, very predictable. We know
it is. What's that?
They're going for broke on everything right now.
Right, exactly. They've accelerated their plans.
Just remember,
Trump put them back.
Yeah, it's important to remember their overall goal, which and why they're going for that overall goal. And when you see the players going after it, the chest is moving around.
Oh, they made sure to bring up I saw on Facebook the other day. I'm banned, of course, but I can still look at it. And I can't believe that account's just not taken down anyway. But anyway, I can still look at it. And then Joe Biden had posted, this Holocaust Remembrance Day. And, of course, there was just people all over that just sucking that up. And it's crazy. How many what is there, like 13 different Holocaust Remembrance Days? I mean, it's hardly like a special event, I don't think, is it? Jeez. Yeah, they push the gun control. And, of course, you always hear, there were a ton of people that got on there. That's what the Nazis did. They disarmed everybody. And then, look, everybody went to the gas chambers. And,
I know.
It's crazy. I mean, that kind of thing is going to has backfired on them a little bit, because these lies are so complex. You can actually get like a PhD in Holocaust studies. You can get a doctorate in something that never happened. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
This is fake stuff, and they'll give you a doctor on it.
Are you sure about that? Is that right?
I know you can study it in college. You can definitely study in college. They're full on.
I don't know if you're being facetious or not. I don't know.
I think you probably could.
That way.
I don't know about a doctorate. But you could get some kind of history doctorate, you know. You can get one in that, but I don't know about exactly in Holocaust studies. But they actually have a thing called Holocaust studies.
Yeah, there's a lot of, as far as the gun control stuff, so there's states that are pushing back, so Tennessee.
Yeah, there is a little bit. They're just saying they're not going to enforce any federal laws. That's what I say. People are like, support the police. Like, okay, who do you think is going to take the guns?
Right.
You know? Who do you think is going to do it? I mean, I do support police to a certain degree, but it's hard to all the way because A, they're trained by Israel. B, the drug war, the fake drug war, has been their excuse for everything. It's been their complete open ticket for all the pretty much unlimited power they have is this BS drug war. And then after that, they're running around pulling people over to extort money out of them. It's hard. It's really hard to support that whole. I would support police if they're just there to be. I mean, I do support them, but I mean, really support them. If they were just there to investigate crimes and criminals, like that's all they're supposed to do, you know, when they're called, because just driving around randomly pulling people over to steal their money, that's what it feels like to me, is what they do. You know, they say it's for safety, but it doesn't make us safe. That doesn't make us safe. So if they stop that and stop the drug war crap, then I think that would fix a lot of their problems. But, yeah, they're not going to do either of those things. So it's only going to get worse. Sorry to be all ray of sunshine. But, yeah.
No, I mean, it's... So it's all right. So it says here, you know, the heading is Tennessee files. Tennessee becomes constitutional carry state after Biden unveils gun control plan. So constitutional carry, that means you don't need a gun permit.
Yeah, you don't need any kind of CCW permit or CHL or anything.
Right, yeah. Right.
Anybody can carry as long as you're allowed to have a gun. Technically,
right.
Carry.
So we'll see some things possibly turn around. You know, it comes down to, I think, kind of who controls Skynet, though. Because, Texas, so they're all owned by the Jew. We know that. We know that in Texas.
Who's behind gun control? Don't you remember when Ted Nugent posted that thing? These are the punks that are trying to take your guns. And there was a Star of David on every one of them, you know. And then he got flack for that. He got in so much trouble for that. And they had to backtrack and apologize, of course. But that's who it is. They're behind the gun control law.
I didn't know Ted Nugent went there.
Good yeah, time. He did once. He did once. Got himself in a lot
when
of trouble over it. What's that?
Now he's back to blaming the Nazis again.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. He got his ass handed to him for, of course, doing that. So, yeah, he got scared. Sure. He probably got a good talking to. Oh, man.
The Texas, they started to talk about secession, right? Remember a couple months ago? And then all of a sudden there was a.
And then they hit him with that storm.
President Storm. Yeah. The weather control. DARPA.
Right, of course.
I believe that's HARP in DARPA. So HARP is the planetary. They have a bunch of different systems they have a bunch of different systems in different parts of the world where they can basically, they have these giant fields, electromagnetic fields that are of these like towers that they have, and they're all equidistant, spread apart, just big, huge field. And they can actually generate, like, weather events with these things.
Yeah. They've been able to do weather modifications for quite, or they've been working on it since World War II, you know, definitely.
Yeah, right. So, you know, there's that. So that's one thing. And then they keep developing new stuff like Skynet, which is the Internet of Things, and then all the satellites that just went up. And whoever, you know, has control of that, that's pretty scary. That's pretty scary stuff.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of scary stuff going on right now. Obviously, the guy who, Trump was overwhelmingly a populist president, and they want us to believe that we're the minority when, in fact, there's just millions of, there's, if you look at all the, like when any kind of comments on social media, if it's about Trump or Biden. There's only a handful of people that are actually legit Biden supporters. You know, it's just they want us to think that guy lost. You know, in any way. It's just
no. At this point, it's just they're just like, you know what? They don't care anymore. They're just they're doing a Hail Mary on their agenda right now.
Yeah.
And trying to get it locked down. And I don't know if they're panicked or if they're confident or what. I don't know if Trump was part of it and it was just to draw people out.
I mean, it's possible. I think it's possible at this point, the way everybody's been played, you know. So, but I really don't think Trump was part of it. No. Then why would they? That's like the same argument that, you know, Hitler was controlled or whatever. You know, why would they would just continue to let Hillary would have been in there? You know, they would have just continued to let the Weimar Republic operate, just like they would have done in Germany. If Trump was a wild card, you know, like Kennedy, he wasn't supposed to get it, but he did.
Yeah. No, I hope so. But
that's
with
right.
QAnon, right? QAnon, the whole QAnon.
There's no such
thing
as QAnon. There's there's Q, and if you've read Q, you know that a lot of this stuff lines up. And then there are the Anons. They're two completely separate things. And the fact that the media keeps trying to discredit it constantly, and calling it something that doesn't even exist, it's pretty telling right there.
Right.
You know, there is Q is a thing, yeah, and then there are the Anons, and they're a thing. They are two completely separate entities. They are not the same thing at all. But the reason they put them, associate them together, the media does, is because so whenever an Anon says something stupid, they associate it with Q. Now, but the reality is all the Q stuff is lined up. If you've been reading it or any of seen the actual Q, you know.
Well, this is what I wanted to read, bro. Right.
Yeah.
There was this, so I heard about, have you heard of Operation Trump?
Excuse me, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Before you get to that, I wanted to let you know you have a caller on the line.
Who? Bring him in.
The big bad wolf. It's Stephen Douglas White.
Sorry. What's up, buddy?
Hello, how are y'all?
Good.
Just what you were starting to go to there with Operation Trucks, that's an excellent comparison for the Q thing and the PSYOP that they were using it for. There's also this thing in the Chinese communist past, they had this thing called, I don't know if it was an operation, but it was 1,000 flowers, as they called it. And they were allowing everybody around Chinese communist country in the 50s, late 50s, to speak their mind, you know, and come out and make criticism and make suggestions, you know, to make the party better, to make the country better. And so all these people would speak their mind, and people started to do things that a little differently, and maybe it got a little better. But then comes the Cultural Revolution, like the early 60s, like around 62, and all those people that had been identified by this 1,000 flowers just smashed them, you know, just came after them all. So there's parallels. I mean, there's definitely a commie tactic, you know.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. And now, as far as I don't know about all of that Q stuff lining up, man. I just there are things
Q,
that people
the Q drops. Yeah, they have. I mean,
there's things that people would attribute to Q that was really a QAnon said something, and then it didn't line up. And
well,
so,
that's what it is. Yeah, they're two separate things. Is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they get to that they want them confused. They because whenever the Anons do, and there's a lot of Anons that are just gone. They're out. They're not.
Do you know who the people were that were behind the Q thing? I heard someone the other day claim that there were 10 people, and 7 of them were military, and 3 weren't. But then this woman didn't know a name.
It's probably a think tank.
Yeah, I don't know who they were. I did not get the details from this woman.
Time will tell on all that. There's no way I'm rushing a final judgment on this Q thing. No way. It's going to have more time. more time. But they're, you know, they're still interesting to talk about the different, you know, scenarios that it could be.
You're pretty hardcore about defending Q, Gregory, William. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
William,
no, right
do you
now,
feel?
Right now, it's still early. That's all.
Well, Greg. Greg, I wanted to hear a little more about what Steven, did you have some more to say about it?
No, I just, where you were headed there, you know, with Operation Trust, I thought, well, now that, that's an excellent
right,
comparison
Greg?
To what it was. Because they convinced everybody in the Soviet Union, actually, was already, I don't know if it was already the Soviet Union, but after the first Russian Revolution, before the Bolshevik Revolution, the first part of 1917, you had this Russian Revolution, and then they were fighting each other. There was like a civil war, and then when the Bolsheviks took over, that's they're the ones that launched that trust. Is that not how it went?
Well, so this was happened in the early 20s, so that was 1917.
So after they had taken over, so there was still fighting going on, though. I mean, there was still like the white Russians, and there was a civil war happening. I believe we had troops in there fighting too. And they wanted to convince people that everything is under control. This is a military operation. Relax. It's all going to be okay. The flag will be back, basically. You know, the empire will be restored kind of thing.
That may be kind of what's going on with this Q thing. Is that possible?
Yeah. It's possible, I think. That
it's
possible. They want
I'm not saying it's not possible. It's not doing anything. Wait. Just wait.
Yeah. Trust the plan. They say trust the plan, even though you don't know what
the plan
is.
Don't do anything.
Yeah.
Trust the plan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trust the plan.
Yeah.
It's just like raising their hands.
Trust the plan. Operation Trust.
Trust. Well, wow. That's pretty. That's a pretty telling.
Very much so.
Yeah.
How about that?
There. Yeah.
So is it all right if I read this little excerpt here? It's just off Wikipedia. It's not very long.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah.
All right. Not about
trust the plan.
Operation Trust was a counterintelligence operation of the State Political Directorate, GPU, of the Soviet Union. The operation, which was set up by GPU's predecessor, Cheka, ran from 1921 to 1926. Set up a fake anti-Bolshevik resistance organization called Monarchist Union of Central Russia in order to help the GPU identify real monarchists and anti-Bolsheviks. The created front company was called the Moscow Municipal Credit Association. The head of the MUCR was Alexander Yakushev, a former bureaucrat of the Ministry of Communications of Imperial Russia, who after the Russian Revolution joined the Narkomat of External Trade. When the Soviets began to allow the former specialist, called Spetsy, to resume the positions of their expertise, this position allowed him to travel abroad and contact Russian emigrants. MUCR kept the monarchist General Alexander Kutepov from active action, as he was convinced to wait for the development of internal anti-Bolshevik forces. Kutepov had previously believed in militant action as a solution to the Soviet occupation and had formed the Combat Organization, a militant splinter from the Russian All-Military Union, led by General Baron Pyotr Nikolaevich Rangel. Kutepov also created the Inner Line as a counterintelligence organization to prevent Bolshevik penetration. It caused the Cheka some problems, but was not overly successful. Among the successes of Trust was the luring of Boris Savinkov and Sidney Reilly into the Soviet Union, where they were captured. Soviets did not organize trust from scratch. The White Army had left sleeper agents, and there were also Royalist Russians who did not leave after the Civil War. These people cooperated to the point of having a loose organizational structure. When the GPU discovered them, they did not liquidate all of them, but maneuvered into creating a shell organization for their own use. Still another episode of the operation was an illegal trip
in fact monitored by the GPU, of a notable emigre, Vasily Shulgin, into the Soviet Union. After his return, he published a book, Three Capitals, with his impressions. In the book, he wrote, in part, that contrary to his expectations, Russia was reviving, and the Bolsheviks would probably be removed from power. The one West, do we know of any books like that that were written, like parallel books, that is something. The one Western historian who had limited access to the trust files, this is the interesting person I looked up, John Costello, reported that they comprised 37 volumes and were such a bewildering welter of double agents, changed code names, and interlocked locking deception operations with the complexity of a symphonic score, that Russian historians from the intelligence service had difficulty separating fact from fantasy. Almost done here. Defector Vasily Mitrokin reported that the trust files were not housed at the SVR offices in Yazanevo, but were kept in the special archival collection at the FSB at the Lubyanka. In 1967, a Soviet adventure TV series, Operation Trust, was created. That might be interesting. Then I started looking at John Costello there, and he died mysteriously in a plane crash, and they don't even disclose how he died. When he was 52 to be exact. He was 52 years old in 1995. He was getting close to something because he was uncovering all these documents that were being declassified. And he was bringing them out to the light. I don't think they liked that very much. It's not like that's a unique thing. Other people have done that. But
that guy was British military intelligence, wasn't he? The one you're talking about that died in the plane crash?
Yes.
Well, I've heard him, yeah. Yeah. I don't know, it's a scary thing.
I'll just read about him here. It's just very short, extremely short, take 30 seconds. John Edward Costello, 1943 to 1995, was a British military historian who wrote about World War I, World War II, and the Cold War. He was born in Greenock near Glasgow, Scotland, and graduated from Cambridge University in law and Soviet economic history. At Cambridge, he was secretary of the union and chairman of the Conservative Association. He then worked as a director and scriptwriter for the BBC before writing on military history. He died unexpectedly at the age of 52 while on a flight from London to Miami, having gone to Britain for research. He was living in Miami and Manhattan. So he died unexpectedly, huh?
Yeah, maybe he wasn't.
Big surprise.
Maybe he wasn't military intelligence. You know, I had the thought that maybe he was part of the, MI6 or something as well. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong or that's just not included there, one or the other.
Right.
But I have heard of that guy, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and the
there's definitely some similarities between this trust and trust the plan stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is all
thank you for having an open mind there, Greg.
I'll acknowledge that.
Well, and it's also a lot easier to tag and identify people with the internet these days than it may have been back then, too, you know. They could use that thing to say, well, this person, that's the algorithm that's keeping a little dossier on all of us and where we've been, what we've visited, what we believe, and et cetera. And
right.
I have to go to some commie sites every once in a while just to confuse it. I surf the wrong
one
side
thing,
of the web.
Well, one thing the internet has done a wonderful job of, especially Facebook, is getting all like-minded people into groups, and they did it themselves. So they were able to just right away. We did it ourselves. You joined up with those, you know, even without the algorithm and stuff. You were going to look for stuff that you interested you. So they got all these groups. And they used to allow any kind of group on there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one time. There was actual, you know, freedom on there. And it was pretty amazing. It was an amazing place at one time. And they realized that they had let the, you know, genie out of their bottle or whatever. They're trying desperately to cap him back up. And, a lot of it got out, especially I think a lot of the truth about World War II. Thank God for the time we had to really spread all that. you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember watching The Greatest Story Never Told and Europa, both on YouTube at one point about 5 years ago. They were both on there. You could find anything you wanted to learn about on YouTube.
YouTube was the same way at one time. You could find anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It all started to change with the election there when the Kekistan memes and Pepe the Frog, and they used all that. They thought, well, we've got to put a stop to this stuff right here. Or it was all part of the plan to start with. I'm not sure which, but I remember
I think it got out of hand on them pretty quick. They realized that giving us unlimited, you know, resource of research and the ability to talk back in real time, you know, all the time. And that's still what the Internet does have over everything else, is that we get to talk back. They're not just broadcasting. You can interact. Mm-hmm. You can put your own links up. You can put your own evidence. You can direct your own ways to do it. It's been the greatest research tool in the history of mankind is the Internet. There's no doubt.
And, you know, ironically, it's been the most connecting as well as the most isolating technology.
Right. It's a paradox.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's been both of those for me since I've been around. I'm 60 now. I remember when we had a rotary dial phone and party lines back a long time ago when I was a kid. And it went from there to just cable TV and pagers. Cable TV, pagers, and car phones. Yeah. And then from there, the internet and smartphones. Yeah. It just kind of went through those three phases. And who knows where we're headed now? It looks like we're headed for the end. That's what they want for us. They want to wipe most of us out, it looks like.
Sure, starting to feel that way. What about this virus vaccination? Boy, that's another thing. They're highly censoring anything on that.
Oh, man. So,
apparently, no one has died from it. Nobody.
Yeah. You know, a talking point that we discussed was it's not a vaccine. Exactly. It's not a vaccine. It's a gene therapy. It's a it's a biowarfare agent used in inoculation. But they talk about it as if it's a vaccine. They advertise it as if it's a vaccine, but really it's not. Yeah, this is the next phase in their program, and I've been
experimental gene therapy operating
about it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like Bill Gates has put the new he was out creating viruses so he could sell the antivirus software to your computer. Now, wonder what he's up to lately. More of the same, it looks like. The things I've been reading scare the bejesus out of me, fellas. It's like this guy from Pfizer. I think it was one of the head guys in Pfizer came out, and he was ranting about this, saying this is a complete disaster. That, you know, within a couple of years, there'll be more people dead than we've ever seen, you know. Ever.
Right. I know they're saying in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I read that.
All
that is kind of freaking me out.
Mm-hmm. So that's the people who get the vaccine. He was talking about the ferrets that they used in the mRNA trial that they did. Every one of the animals died. They were all dead. And within about 3 years, they all died. And he figured that's going to happen to the people who get these shots. But then there's also this thing I've discovered, that this is what's called a leaky vaccine. And when you have a leaky vaccine, it protects you from the symptoms of the disease, but not from catching it and spreading it. So these people are still spreading this virus around and mutating it, making it more dangerous.
Well, getting it more.
Exactly. So they're going to get us that way, the ones who don't take the vaccine. It's diabolical, man. It just looks like this is their end game. And on top of all that, there's this war ramping up right now. All of these troops massing around Ukraine, and that really scares me more, because it's kept. Richard thought it was a distraction, that it's just more war talking. Okay, that's been happening a lot. You know, they do that from time to time. They definitely ramp that up, but this just keeps building and building. Yeah, this is building and building, and with Biden in there, where he said Putin's a killer and a warmonger and dangerous.
Yeah.
He said that publicly, and then this whole thing got started back and forth with that. There's this guy who was elected in the Ukraine, Zelensky, Volodymyr, I don't know how to say his name, Vladimir. Zelensky. Well, he's Jewish, okay, ironically, and he's a comedian. He's a comedian, and he ran on a platform of ending this war. And, you know, now he's flipped. He's doing the opposite. They're going, and they're massing troops and threatening not only the breakaway republics there in Ukraine, the Donbass with the Donetsk and Lugansk over in the far east. But they, this guy that's the leader there now, he signed a military order that gave his military authorization to take back Crimea as well as to take over those two republics. And he signed that order. And when he signed that order, that's when Russia started sending all their troops up to the border to protect themselves and saying that they would intervene to help those two republics if they got run over.
Over Crimea?
Yeah. Well, not, well, the other two, the Donbass, they surrounded the Donbass, said they would intervene to protect the people there in Donbass, especially if the U.S. got involved. One of the I don't know if it was the defense minister, one of the officials in Russia said that if cruise missiles were fired from U.S. warships in the Black Sea that landed there in eastern Ukraine, that those ships would get destroyed. So it's building up back and forth more and more. I have not seen it like this since, the Cold War.
Cold War, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of starting to get this way back in 2014 when they shot down that airliner and the Ukraine was an active war zone. But, Obama was in then. And, you had Hillary and Biden, and they were running the show. And then things settled down. They settled down while Trump was in there. It's like they picked up right where they left off again with the whole military agenda that they had in order. It's like Trump was just a speed bump for that stuff. And I don't know. It smells like it's more than just the usual distraction to me. I get the same feeling I got over a year ago when they were going on about COVID and this new Wuhan virus. I thought, that's coming. That's big. My roommate said, oh, you're crazy. There won't be anybody talking about COVID in 6 weeks. 3 months from now, you'll never have COVID again. Well, I hate to be right, but I was right then. Yeah. I sure hope I'm wrong about this, too, but I get a really... really bad feeling that the next couple of weeks we might see a war break out over there, that they may, that Ukraine will try to, that's what they've already attacked. They're shelling them all the time. There's constantly this line of contact, and they have trenches dug that look almost like World War I trenches. They come up to a few yards from each other, and that's just it's been a static line for the past 4 years, and they've been shooting back and forth over it, and now they're starting to shell each other a lot more. And they have thousands of tanks, 100,000 troops on both sides of this line just ready to go at it.
Really?
So I hope that doesn't happen. Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen. So but it's really ramping up.
I have no idea what's that on there right now.
You haven't heard any of that in our media, have you?
No.
Who are the other Stephen, who are the other there's the Russian troops, and who's the other forces? Is that the UN?
NATO would be opposing the Russian forces, and then of course Turkey's part of NATO, and Ukraine wanted to join NATO. Tomorrow they're going to have an emergency meeting of NATO in Brussels, and Ukraine called this meeting, even though they're not a member. There's part of the NATO charter, it's called Article 15, that they were able to petition NATO for help. And so that's what they're trying to get NATO to come and back them up. And Biden and all of the people, the Brits, even France has said encouraging words to Ukraine, like, we got your back. Go ahead. Go in there and take those things. And now, do they mean it? I don't know. I hope they don't mean it. But, time will tell. And yeah, Turkey, Turkey was involved in that recent conflict with the little breakaway independent part of Azerbaijan there that's had Armenians in it, and the Azerbaijanis came in and pretty much wiped them out, and they used a lot of Turkish drones to do that with, and had some Turkish troops helping them out. Well, now Ukraine's been buying the same drones, and they have some of the same troops there teaching them how to use them, and Russia warned Turkey not to do that, and Russia warned Turkey not to let U.S. ships go through the Bosphorus Strait into the Black Sea, that would just, be a violation of a particular, I think it's called the Montreux Treaty that had been signed earlier. But Turkey ignored them. This guy Erdogan, I mean, he's a megalomaniac, man. He's just, he really thinks that he's going to be the new Ataturk. And he kind of flipped Putin off and went ahead and did it anyway. So Russia has closed the border with Turkey today. They have canceled any air flights between Russia and Ankara, the Turkish capital, and they've called all the Russian citizens to come home. And that's pretty ominous right there. That's it's building up. I think over the next week, something will or will not happen. Next Wednesday, Putin has a big speech scheduled and an emergency session of the Duma right after that. So I don't know what he expects to be going on or what he has planned, or maybe he's hip to somebody else's plans. But that's an interesting date, too, April the 21st. You know, a lot of stuff happens on April 19th and 20th. It's a certain person's birthday on the 20th, and then the 19th, they call that Patriots Day. That was when Oklahoma City happened, when Warsaw was wiped out, and a lot of things have happened on those days. They're really big in some kind of satanic calendar. So
maybe, yeah.
That's just a coincidence. You know, that's just an interesting coincidence on top of everything. And then he's got this speech scheduled next Wednesday.
Or Stephen, is it a coincidence or is it a coincidence?
Exactly. Coincidence, that's right.
I think
I don't know if this guy's a Cohen or not, that's the leader of Ukraine, but yeah.
Yeah. It sounds a lot like Poland in World War II.
That's what I was thinking.
Very much so.
And who's behind pulling the strings, you know, who's pulling the strings on Turkey? We've got a lot of players, right? So it was Britain and France.
The Israelis were very involved with Turkey in this war in Azerbaijan, and the Israelis are one of the main suppliers for Azerbaijan militarily too. So you know they've got a hand in this. I don't really see that they're the biggest player in this right now, but they are involved. They're involved. You know, I don't know if they're like at the top of this thing, but yeah, they got a hand in it. For sure, or some body part.
Yeah. They got a big. They got a nose in it.
There you go.
they got a big nose into it.
Yeah. So, Stephen,
next 2 weeks, man, I'm on pins and needles looking at what's happening over there.
Well, Stephen, I don't know what's. I was just going to add. I don't know what sources you're mainly looking to. Of course, like you said, in the U.S. You're not going to hear a peep about much any of this. But with a lot of geopolitics this way, these days, that does seem to be the case. I mean, the only ones I know of that I'll sometimes look through would be, well, let's see. You agreed that Mint Press is a good one. And then antiwar.com, they're okay. And, of course, Sputnik. And RT, Sputnik News and RT.
Yeah, Sputnik and RT. Which is the Holocaust hoax.
Right. None of them are perfect. I mean, for geopolitics, you can go to them, but yeah.
Yeah, the Mint Press will go right up to the edge. And I've seen some guy I saw criticize Whitney Webb and the guy that, who basically paid for Mint Press. I forgot who I think he might be Whitney Webb's father or something. I forget that whole story, but yeah, I do see some good reporting on there, but there's something about it that makes me, you know, I have to look at it twice when I see it. And there's a Greek website called War News 24/7 that I've been getting a lot of the military news from. You have to go to that when you visit that site, you have to translate it from Greek into English with the Google Translate, but a lot of these military moves that have been made on both sides are on there, and they don't seem to have it. I haven't found that they're pushing an agenda.
There is a better one I can recommend than any of those. I forgot about The Saker. TheSaker.is is very good for geopolitics.
Saker?
Faker?
No, S-A-K-E-R. So
S-A-K-E-R, yeah.
Yeah, so THESAKER.IS.
Well, that was the first we've really heard of this Ukraine. I'm glad you brought it up, Stephen. It was really awesome of you to
dip
us to this. This is important stuff.
Yeah, guys check it out and see what you can discover, you know? I've run my mouth over your hour, but it's really nice.
That's pretty good. This is where I was going to end it anyway. My wife is home, and I don't want to be. I have to be cooped up over here to do the show, so I'm going to be that's probably it for this week. But thanks a lot. Maybe we can do it again next week.
Well, soon anyway, especially, and I hope, let me know when Darren's going to be able to join you too. That'll be great, you guys.
Darnell. Yeah, we're trying to get him on.
Darnell. I don't know why I said Darren. Darnell, I'm speaking again.
I don't know where he went. He didn't get tonight, but we'll see. Try to get him.
Okay. All right, fellas, I enjoyed it. Hey, I'll sign off and talk to you guys later. Talk to you soon.
All right. It was awesome. Thank you.
All right, Steve.
Yeah, everybody, that was great.
Thank you.